The grinding screech of the morning alarm tore through my consciousness, dragging me from the merciful oblivion of sleep. My eyes opened to the same cracked ferrocrete ceiling of my HAB unit, the same water stain that resembled the Aquila if you squinted hard enough. 16 minutes later, I joined the shuffling mass of humanity that filled the transit corridors of Hive Tethys, pressed against unwashed bodies as we were herded toward Manufactorum Delta 7. The Omnisia-blessed Manufactorum loomed before us, a towering monument of industrial might. Smoke belched from 100 chimneys, turning the already dim hive light into a perpetual twilight. The adamantium gates swallowed us. Thousands of workers moving through the security checkpoints, where servitors scanned our worker chips and Mechanicus adepts monitored data screens for any sign of deviation. My station waited for me on assembly line 47 Gamma, where I had spent the last 7 years of my life attaching power coupling housings to Law's rifle frames. The same motion, repeated thousands of times each shift. The Manufactorum floor stretched for kilometers in every direction, a vast cathedral of industry where human cogs served the machine. The constant cacophony, the hiss of pneumatic presses, the clank of conveyor systems, the drone of servitor announcements formed a background noise that had long since become as natural to me as my own heartbeat. 3 hours into my shift, the rhythm broke. A scream cut through the mechanical symphony, sharper and more urgent than the usual cries of exhaustion or minor injuries. Worker 5291, I never knew his name, only his designation, had his sleeve caught in the adamantium press. The massive machine did not distinguish between metal components and human flesh. It pulled him in with inexorable force, crushing bone and pulping organs with mechanical precision. The tech priests overseeing our section did not halt production. They gathered around the press, their mechadendrites waving in agitation as they recited binary prayers to soothe the machine spirit that had consumed human flesh. Servitors moved forward with cleaning implements, scooping the remains into containers marked for the corpse starch processors. Nothing was wasted in the Manufactorum. Worker 5291 would continue to serve the Imperium, feeding his fellow workers through the protein dispensers in the nutrition hall. Production resumed within minutes. The blood was cleaned away, the press reconsecrated, and a replacement worker was already being guided to the station by an overseer. I continued attaching power couplings, my hands working independently of my mind. 15 years of service had taught me to divorce my thoughts from my actions. Thinking too much about the grinding reality of existence in Hive Tethys led only to despair or worse, heresy. By mid-shift, my lungs burned with each breath. The air filtration systems had been malfunctioning for weeks, allowing toxic fumes from the promethium refineries on the lower levels to seep upward through the hive. The stench of chemicals mixed with the usual odors of sweat, oil, and ozone that permeated the Manufactorum. Many workers wore filtration masks, those lucky enough to afford them or connected enough to acquire them through the black market. I had neither advantage. A persistent itch spread across my chest, and during the brief sanctioned waste elimination period, I discovered pustulent lesions forming on my skin. Angry red welts with yellow centers dotted my torso, seeping clear fluid when touched. The sight was concerning enough that I reported to the shift Medicae, risking a productivity citation. The Medicae station was crowded with workers displaying similar symptoms. The Medicae, a hunched man with augmetic eyes that whirred as they focused, barely glanced at my chest before applying a stinging antiseptic paste. He stamped my productivity record with a code indicating acceptable workplace deformity and waved me back to my station. His dismissal carried an unspoken message. Such afflictions were the cost of serving the Emperor through labor. To complain further would mark me as weak, possibly seditious. As I returned to line 47 Gamma, I passed worker 3118, a man who had operated the rivet press next to mine for nearly a decade. His face was drawn, eyes darting nervously as he lined toward me. He mentioned strange occurrences in the lower HAB blocks where he lived. Entire sections found empty, with no signs of struggle but meals still on tables and doors locked from outside. Not the typical gang violence or arbitrator purges that periodically swept through the underhive, but something more methodical, more systematic. The overseer's electro whip cracked near our stations, a warning against unauthorized communication during production hours. We separated immediately, but the seed of unease had been planted in my mind. I had heard similar whispers from other workers, fragments of rumors that painted a disturbing picture. The remainder of my shift passed in a blur of mechanical motion and increasing respiratory distress. The lesions on my chest burned beneath my work coveralls, and each breath seemed to draw less oxygen than the last. By the time the shift bell sounded, my vision had narrowed to a tunnel, darkness creeping in from the periphery. 16 hours of service to the Emperor, completed despite physical weakness. The administratum would record my attendance as satisfactory. The journey back through the hive was more harrowing than usual. The transit corridors were unusually crowded, with many levels restricted by arbitrator barricades. Announcement servitors claimed maintenance issues and filtration system repairs, but the presence of unmarked troop carriers suggested something else entirely. I was forced to take a detour through HAB Block 371, an area I normally avoided due to its proximity to the Prometheum refineries. The air in 371 was nearly unbreathable, thick with chemical fumes that left an oily residue on exposed skin. Most of the inhabitants wore makeshift breathing apparatuses, scraps of cloth soaked in water, or, for the more fortunate, actual filtration masks. Children with distended bellies and weeping sores played in the corridors, seemingly adapted to the toxic environment. I hurried through, covering my mouth with my sleeve, but the damage was already done. By the time I reached my own HAB block, I was coughing up flecks of blood. My narrow HAB unit offered little respite. The ventilation system pumped the same contaminated air through the entire level, and the walls were thin enough that I could hear my neighbors hacking coughs and muffled prayers to the Emperor. I consumed my daily ration of corpse starch and synthetic proteins, forcing down the bland paste despite my nausea. Nutrition was necessary to maintain productivity. Sleep eluded me that night. The lesions had spread, now covering most of my torso and beginning to appear on my neck. More disturbing were the rumors I had heard, the strange disappearances. In the darkness of my HAB unit, imagination painted grim possibilities: plague quarantine, purity purges, population control measures. The Imperium had countless methods for dealing with excess or problematic populations, none of them gentle. Morning came too soon, and with it another 16-hour shift. The Manufactorum was unusually quiet when I arrived, the number of workers noticeably reduced. Those present moved with heightened anxiety, eyes downcast, avoiding interaction. The overseers were more aggressive, the tech priests more agitated in their movements around the sacred machinery. Worker 3118 was absent from his station. In his place stood a nervous youth, clearly unfamiliar with the rivet press operations. When the overseer was distracted, I checked 3118's workstation, finding it hastily cleared. Tucked beneath the console, overlooked in whatever removal had occurred, was a blood-stained document bearing the seal of the administratum. I palmed it quickly, concealing it within my coveralls. During the nutrition break, I examined the document in the relative privacy of a waste disposal alcove. Most of it was written in administrative cipher, but certain phrases stood out with chilling clarity. Project Cleansing Tide, Population Reduction Initiative, Resource Reallocation Through Biological Asset Processing. A map of the hive showed various sectors marked for different phases of the operation, with my district highlighted for processing within the week. The implications froze my blood. This was not random disappearances or typical hive violence. This was systematic culling of the population, sanctioned at the highest levels. Perhaps the toxic air was not a malfunction but deliberate, weakening the population before collection, ensuring minimal resistance. As I contemplated this horror, a commotion erupted several stations away. A worker, designation 4772, was being restrained by figures in unmarked black uniforms. Not arbitrators with their distinctive armor, nor Mechanica security with their red robes, but something else. They wore rebreathers that concealed their features, making them anonymous instruments of whatever authority had dispatched them. Worker 4772 had been vocal about the deteriorating conditions, the increasing toxicity of the air, the disappearances. He had whispered of organizing some form of protest or petition to the higher authorities. Now he was being dragged away, his feet leaving streaks of blood on the Manufactorum floor as he struggled. The other workers kept their heads down, focusing intently on their tasks as if the scene playing out before them was invisible. The masked figures passed close to my station. One turned toward me, the blank lenses of the rebreather revealing nothing of the human behind it. For a moment, I feared they had somehow detected the document hidden in my coveralls, that they knew of my newfound knowledge. But they moved on, dragging Worker 4772 toward the freight elevators that led to the lower levels. Production continued uninterrupted. The tech priests intoned binaric prayers of productivity. The overseers monitored output quotas. The servitors replaced depleted material bins. The great machine of imperial industry ground on, uncaring of the human components being replaced within it. By shift end, the lesions on my chest had begun to weep a yellowish fluid that stained my coveralls. My breathing had become a wet, rattling sound that drew concerned glances from nearby workers. The Medicaid would likely declare me unfit for service soon, marking me for reassignment, a euphemism whose meaning now carried new and terrible weight in light of the document I carried. As I joined the stream of workers leaving the Manufactorum, I noticed more of the unmarked transports waiting outside the main gates. Figures in the same black uniforms and rebreathers stood watching us, selecting individuals from the crowd with pointing gestures. Those chosen were quietly separated and led to the vehicles. No explanations were given, no resistance was offered. I kept my head down and shuffled forward with the mass of humanity, just another faceless worker in the vast hive. But inside my mind, terrible knowledge festered like the lesions on my chest. Project Cleansing Tide was coming for us all, and there was nowhere in the hive to hide from the Emperor's will. I never made it back to my HAB unit that night. The Manufactorum's klaxons blared without warning 3 minutes before the end of the shift. Red emergency lumens bathed the production floor in a bloody glow, replacing the harsh white illumination that had burned our retinas for 16 hours. A metallic servitor-processed voice echoed through the Vox system, announcing a facility-wide containment procedure. All personnel were to remain at their stations until further notice. The workers around me froze, tools still clutched in blistered hands. Fear rippled across the assembly floor like a physical wave. Containment procedures were rare. I had experienced only two in my 15 years of service. Neither had ended well for those caught inside. Our section overseer, a man with half his face replaced by augmetics, strode down the line, electro whip crackling at his side. His remaining organic eye showed no concern, only the cold calculation of a man following protocol. He instructed us to continue production while the situation was assessed. The quota would not change despite the lockdown. I attached power coupling housings with mechanical precision, but my mind raced with possibilities. Containment could mean many things in a hive manufactorum: chemical lake, radiation breach, worker insurrection. None explained the unmarked transports I had seen earlier or the document hidden against my chest. Hours passed, no further announcements came. Workers began to sway on their feet, exhaustion compounding with hunger and fear. The air grew fouler as the ventilation systems cycled down to emergency levels. My lesions throbbed beneath my coveralls, the pain sharpening my senses even as fatigue dulled them. Through the distant archways connecting to the Eastern Assembly Wing, I glimpsed movement. Figures in sealed hazard suits moved with purpose, their forms obscured by the industrial haze. Not the black uniformed figures from earlier, but something else. The suits bore the red markings of the Adeptus Mechanicus. Behind them came the unmistakable shapes of combat servitors, heavy weapons mounted where arms should be. Then the screams began, distant at first, then abruptly silenced. Not the cries of industrial accidents I had grown accustomed to, but sounds of pure terror cut short with mechanical efficiency. The workers around me pretended not to hear, heads bowed lower over their tasks, as if productivity might shield them from whatever fate had befallen the Eastern Wing. The overseer received a transmission through his cranial implant. His organic eye widened slightly, the only indication that the news disturbed him. He ordered us to form lines and prepare for processing. The word choice sent ice through my veins, processing, the same term used in the document about biological asset processing. My body moved on autopilot, joining the line forming near the freight elevators. Self-preservation warred with the deeply ingrained habit of obedience. 15 years of compliance had beaten independent thought from most of us. We shuffled forward like groks to slaughter, eyes downcast, shoulders hunched. The freight elevator doors opened. Inside stood figures that defied easy classification, not quite servitors, but no longer fully human. Their bodies bore crude surgical modifications, limbs replaced with utilitarian mechanical appendages, eyes swapped for targeting lenses. Yet unlike true servitors, they lacked the extensive cranial augmentation that would render them mindless. These were augmented humans, conscious but emotionless, their faces blank masks as they herded workers into the elevator. I noticed the marking on the elevator's interior panel, the symbol of the Adeptus Mechanicus Biologus. My blood turned to ice. Everyone in the hive knew of the Biologus, the specialized sect within the Mechanicus focused on biological research and augmentation. Their laboratories were spoken of in whispers, places where the line between machine and flesh blurred in ways that violated the sanctity of the human form, all in service to the Omnissiah's quest for knowledge. As the line shuffled forward, my survival instinct finally overcame decades of conditioned obedience. I glanced around, assessing options with newfound clarity. 3 meters to my right, partially concealed behind a coolant pipe, was the access panel to a maintenance duct. I had seen tech adepts use it when servicing the assembly line machinery. The moment came when the overseer turned to check the count of workers entering the elevator. I slipped sideways, ducking behind a material hopper, then lunged for the access panel. My fingers, calloused from years of labor, found purchase on the release catch. The panel swung open with a soft hiss of equalizing pressure. I squeezed into the narrow space, pulling the panel closed behind me. The duct was barely wide enough for my shoulders, lined with pipes that carried coolant, hydraulic fluid, and data cables throughout the manufactorum. The metal surface burned cold against my skin, aggravating the lesions on my chest. I ignored the pain and began crawling away from the assembly floor, guided only by the faint green glow of maintenance lumens. The duct system formed a labyrinthine network within the industrial underbelly of the manufactorum. I navigated by instinct more than knowledge, choosing paths that led downward, away from the processing that awaited my fellow workers. The sounds of the assembly floor faded, replaced by the deep mechanical heartbeat of the manufactorum's core systems, the rumble of generators, the hiss of pressure valves, the rhythmic thudding of primary pistons. After what felt like hours of crawling through increasingly narrow passages, I reached a junction where the duct widened into a maintenance hub. Grates in the floor provided views into the chambers below. What I saw through those grates would haunt me until my dying day. The chamber directly beneath me was a processing floor I had never known existed. Clinical and efficient, it bore little resemblance to the chaotic, grimy production areas where I had spent my working life. Workers from my shift, people I had stood beside for years, lay strapped to metal tables arranged in precise rows. They were conscious, eyes wide with terror, mouths working in silent screams. Their vocal cords had been surgically disabled, allowing the tech priests to work without the distraction of human noise, and work they did with mechanical precision. Mechadendrites whirred and clicked as they opened flesh, removed limbs, extracted organs. Servitors moved between the tables, collecting the harvested parts in marked containers. Tech priests monitored the process, their monotone voices discussing resource reclamation quotas and biological material efficiency, as if they were processing raw materials rather than living humans. In a sense, that was exactly what they were doing. The Imperium had always viewed human life as its most abundant resource. Here was that philosophy stripped of all pretense, laid bare in its cold utilitarian horror. I watched as worker 6723, a woman who had operated the station 2 positions down from mine for the past 3 years, had her limbs methodically removed while still conscious. Her torso, now just a collection of organs waiting to be harvested, trembled on the table. The tech priest overseeing her processing made notations on a data slate, commenting on the superior quality of her lung tissue despite the environmental contamination. Another table held worker 4119, a man I had shared nutrition breaks with occasionally. His skull had been opened, brain exposed as delicate mechadendrites probed and sectioned the tissue. A tech priest with extensive augmentation leaned close, ocular implants whirring as they adjusted focus. He remarked that the specimen showed minimal cognitive degradation despite years of exposure to toxic manufacturing byproducts, marking it as suitable for servitor conversion rather than simple resource extraction. The systematic horror unfolding below me was not the result of alien malevolence or demonic corruption. This was purely human efficiency, the logical endpoint of an Imperium that valued production above all else. We had always been expendable parts in the great machine. Now, with resources stretched thin, even our physical components were being reclaimed. I forced myself to watch, to bear witness. The document I had found was no paranoid fantasy or heretical propaganda. Project Cleansing Tide was real, a calculated culling of the hive population, converting excess human resources into raw materials for the Imperium's endless war machine. Moving on through the maintenance network, I discovered more processing chambers, each dedicated to different aspects of human rendering. In one, tech priests supervised the conversion of harvested muscle tissue into nutrient paste, the same corpse starch that had formed my daily rations for years. In another, limbs were fitted with crude mechanical components, creating the augmented humans I had seen earlier, worker servitors that retained just enough humanity to function without the expensive neural augmentation of true servitors. Most horrifying was the chamber where cranial extraction took place. Conscious workers had their skulls opened, portions of their brains removed and replaced with basic machine interfaces. These were not the complete mind wipes of standard servitors, but targeted excisions of specific brain regions, those controlling emotion, independent thought, self-preservation. The results were humans who would work without complaint, eat without disgust, follow orders without question, yet required far fewer resources to create than full servitors. I had to escape, not just from the maintenance ducts, but from the manufactorum, from the hive itself. The knowledge I carried would mean my immediate processing if discovered. Yet I could not shake the feeling that there was nowhere to run, that Project Cleansing Tide encompassed not just my manufactorum, but the entire hive, perhaps the entire subsector. For hours I navigated the industrial underbelly, following ventilation shafts and maintenance crawlways. Twice I froze as tech adepts passed below, performing rites of maintenance on the ancient machinery. Once I had to backtrack when a passage ended at a security checkpoint manned by the same black uniformed figures I had seen earlier. Eventually, I found a waste disposal chute that bypassed the manufactorum's main security systems. The chute emptied into an effluent canal that carried industrial byproducts to the underhive processing facilities. The canal's contents burned my skin and aggravated my lesions, but I waded through the chemical soup, following its current toward the outer walls of the manufactorum complex. I emerged into the perpetual twilight of the mid-hive, my coveralls stained with effluent, my lungs burning from chemical exposure. Freedom should have brought relief, but what I saw crushed that momentary hope. The entire hab sector surrounding the manufactorum had been cordoned off. Adeptus Munitorum vehicles formed a perimeter, their armored hulls bearing the eagle of the Imperial Guard rather than the usual administratum markings. Troops in environmental gear directed the flow of civilians, entire hab blocks being evacuated in an orderly fashion. Loudspeakers mounted on the vehicles broadcast continuous announcements about a mandatory relocation due to gene-stealer cult activity in the lower levels. The lie was transparent. There were no signs of the violence that accompanied actual cult purges, no pyres of burning bodies, no summary executions, no ecclesiarchy priests performing rites of purification. This was something else entirely, something methodical and planned. From my position in the shadows of a waste processing unit, I watched as families were sorted into groups, not randomly, but based on physical characteristics, height, build, apparent health. The stronger, healthier specimens were directed to transports bearing the Mechanicus Biologus symbol. The elderly, the visibly ill, and those bearing mutations were loaded onto unmarked black transports similar to those I had seen at the manufactorum. Children were separated from parents, sorted according to some criteria I couldn't discern. The population accepted this treatment with the same resigned compliance I had witnessed in my fellow workers, heads down, moving forward, trusting in the Emperor's plan even as they were being processed like livestock. I realized then that escape was an illusion. The entire hive was being systematically harvested, its human resources redistributed according to the needs of the Imperium. Those deemed suitable would become workers, soldiers, or breeding stock for other worlds. Those deemed excessive or defective would be rendered down to their component resources, their proteins feeding the armies, their organs supplying the Medicaid facilities, their limbs forming the basis for servitor production. The lesions on my chest throbbed with renewed intensity. The toxins I had been exposed to in the manufactorum and the effluent canal were taking their toll. My body, already weakened by years of industrial exposure, was failing. I would not survive long enough to escape the hive, even if such escape were possible, but I could bear witness. I could remember the names and faces of those I had worked beside, those I had seen processed. In a system that reduced humans to resources, remembering their humanity was perhaps the only resistance possible. As I huddled in the shadows, watching the systematic dismantling of my world, I clutched the blood-stained document to my chest. Project Cleansing Tide continued around me, implacable and efficient, the perfect expression of the Imperium's cold calculus of human worth. I slipped through the chemical-slick drainage tunnels beneath the mid-hive, my coveralls stiff with dried effluent and blood. The lesions on my chest had formed a hardened crust, occasionally cracking open with each labored breath. 3 days had passed since my escape from the Manufactorum. 3 days of hiding in the industrial waste of Hive Tethys, moving only during shift change hours when the transit corridors flooded with enough bodies to mask my movements. The underhive opened before me like a diseased mouth, where the midhive maintained pretenses of imperial order with its scheduled power outages and semi-functional waste reclamation. The underhive existed in a perpetual state of decay. Rust-colored moisture dripped from exposed pipes overhead. The air hung thick with the stench of human waste, industrial runoff, and the unmistakable metallic tang of blood. I pressed myself against a corroded support column as a patrol of underhive scavengers passed nearby. They moved with the jerky, desperate energy of the chronically malnourished, their bodies adorned with crude gang markings cut into flesh and painted with industrial pigments. Their weapons, an assortment of sharpened pipes and modified industrial tools, gleamed dully in the sporadic illumination of malfunctioning lumen strips. When they passed, I continued deeper into the labyrinth of abandoned hab units and collapsed infrastructure that formed the lowest levels of the hive. My destination remained unclear even to myself. There was no safe haven, no authority that would protect a worker who had witnessed the truth of Project Cleansing Tide. My only goal was to survive long enough to what? The question haunted me as I navigated the treacherous terrain of collapsed ferrocrete and exposed power conduits. The distant sound of commerce drew me forward, not the regulated exchanges of the mid-hive commercial sectors with their administratum oversight and tithe collectors, but something rawer, more primal. I followed the noise through a maze of partially collapsed corridors until I reached a vast chamber that had once been a primary water purification facility. The massive filtration tanks had long since been repurposed, their interiors now housing ramshackle dwellings and market stalls. This was the infamous sump market, a place spoken of in whispers even in the mid-hive. Here anything could be bought or sold, narcotics distilled from industrial chemicals, weapons scavenged from dead arbitrators, food of questionable origin. I pulled my hood lower, hunching my shoulders to appear smaller, less noticeable among the press of underhive denizens. The market operated in near darkness, illuminated only by scattered chemical lamps that cast sickly green and yellow light across the transactions. I moved between the stalls, observing without engaging. My workers' coveralls, though filthy, marked me as an outsider here. The underhive had its own fashion, layers of scavenged materials, protective padding made from compressed synth fiber, rebreathers fashioned from industrial parts. A commotion near the center of the market caught my attention. A crowd had gathered around a raised platform constructed from salvaged metal plating. Upon it stood a figure whose appearance sent cold dread through my body. Though not wearing the red robes of a fully ordained tech priest, the numerous augmentations and mechadendrite attachments protruding from beneath a stained gray smock identified him as Mechanicus affiliated. A rogue tech adept, perhaps, or one operating on the fringes of the Omnisciah's doctrine. The tech adept raised a mechadendrite, the appendage clutching something that gleamed wetly in the chemical lamplight. An augmetic eye, its optical cables still dripping with fluid, the lens flickering with residual power. The crowd murmured appreciatively as the tech adept rotated the eye, demonstrating its functionality. Behind him, arranged on blood-stained sheets of plasteel, lay dozens of similar augmetics, mechanical hands, reinforced jawbones, subdermal armor plating, neural interfaces, a flesh market. Not the euphemistic biological resource redistribution of Project Cleansing Tide, but its shadow reflection, the illegal trade in augmetic parts and human organs that flourished in the regulatory void of the Underhive. I edged closer, morbid fascination overcoming caution. The tech adept was now displaying a particularly complex piece of augmetic equipment, a partial cranial replacement with integrated targeting systems. The crude augmentation bore little resemblance to the precision work of sanctioned Mechanicus facilities, but would be functional enough for Underhive needs. What caught my eye, however, was not the augmetic itself, but the serial number etched into its housing. Manufactorum Delta 7, Worker 3118, my neighbor from the assembly line, the man who had warned me about disappearances before being taken himself. My stomach lurched. I stumbled backward, knocking into a market patron who snarled a curse at me. The tech adept's head swiveled in my direction, augmetic eye whirring as it focused on the disturbance. I turned away, moving deeper into the crowd, but not before I glimpsed the rest of his merchandise. Each piece bore similar markings, my coworkers, my shift mates, people I had stood beside for years, now reduced to spare parts in an Underhive market. The implications hit me with physical force. Project Cleansing Tide was not a closed system. The processing I had witnessed was not merely the Imperium's efficient use of resources. There was leakage, parts being diverted, sold, traded. The horror of the situation deepened. Not only were my fellow workers being harvested like crops, but their components were being trafficked for profit. I retreated from the main market area, finding shelter in the shadow of a defunct filtration pipe. As my eyes adjusted to the deeper darkness, I realized I was not alone. The pipe contained a small encampment, bedrolls made from discarded packaging materials, a chemical heater providing minimal warmth, personal effects arranged with the careful precision of those who owned almost nothing. Before I could withdraw, hands grabbed me from behind. Strong hands, their grip professionally placed to disable without causing unnecessary damage. I was dragged backward, a hood thrown over my head, my arms pinned behind my back with practiced efficiency. My captors worked in silence, communicating through touch and gesture rather than words. The journey that followed was disorienting, twists and turns through what felt like maintenance shafts and abandoned transit tunnels. The hands guiding me never grew rough, but neither did they relent. These were not Underhive gangers with their crude violence, but professionals who handled me with the detached precision of those accustomed to managing human cargo. When the hood was removed, I found myself in a chamber that defied the decaying aesthetic of the Underhive. Clinical surfaces gleamed under bright surgical lumens. Instruments were arranged on sterilized trays. The air held the sharp scent of Medicaid-grade disinfectant rather than the fetid miasma of the surrounding areas. My captors wore the garb of Medicaid personnel, not the crude approximations found in Underhive clinics, but proper surgical attire. Their faces were covered by rebreather masks, their eyes hidden behind protective goggles. They moved with the confident efficiency of trained professionals as they secured me to a surgical table, restraints tightening around my wrists, ankles, and forehead. One of them removed my filthy coveralls, exposing the lesions that now covered most of my torso. The Medicaid studied them with professional interest, prodding the inflamed tissue with a gloved finger. A data slate appeared, notes were taken. My physical condition was being assessed, cataloged, evaluated. Another Medicaid joined the examination, pointing to specific areas of my body. They spoke to each other in the clipped, technical language of their profession, discussing my organs as one might discuss cuts of meat. My lungs were compromised but salvageable, suitable for transplantation to a mid-hive recipient with sufficient resources for anti-rejection treatments. My liver showed signs of worker-grade toxin exposure, but remained functional within acceptable parameters. My heart was deemed prime grade, apparently having suffered minimal damage despite years of industrial pollution. With clinical detachment, they categorized each of my body parts according to quality and potential value. The lesions on my skin reduced my overall worth, but the intact organs beneath retained their utility. I was, in their estimation, a moderately valuable specimen despite the environmental damage. As they continued their assessment, I pieced together the nature of the operation from their technical exchanges. This was no official Mechanicus facility, but neither was it a crude Underhive chop shop. These were trained Medicaid personnel operating an illegal harvesting facility that supplied replacement organs and augmetics to wealthy mid-hive citizens who could not or would not access official Mechanicus channels. The lead Medicaid prepared an injection, explaining to her colleagues that I would be placed in stasis for preliminary processing. The first harvest would include a kidney and portions of my liver, parts that could be removed without immediately terminating my utility as a resource. I would then be maintained in a semi-conscious state while the remaining organs were harvested sequentially, maximizing their freshness and viability. The needle approached my arm. I strained against the restraints, accomplishing nothing but the reopening of several lesions on my chest. The Medicaid paused, adjusting the dosage based on my body weight and apparent health status. The conversation continued around me, discussing the logistics of organ preservation and transport to mid-hive clients. A sudden explosion rocked the facility. The surgical lumens flickered, plunging the room into momentary darkness before emergency lighting activated. The Medicaid froze, their attention diverted from me to the source of the disturbance. Through the reinforced door of the surgical chamber came the unmistakable sounds of combat, the crack of crude firearms, the wet impact of bladed weapons finding flesh, screams of pain and rage. The lead Medicaid barked orders, her professional demeanor cracking under pressure. Two of her colleagues retrieved weapons from a concealed compartment, sleek, well-maintained auto pistols that spoke of mid-hive connections rather than under-hive scavenging. They moved toward the door, preparing to defend the facility. The raid provided the distraction I needed. The restraint on my right wrist had been improperly secured, leaving a fraction of mobility that would have been insufficient under normal circumstances. With the Medicaid's attention diverted, I worked my hand free, ignoring the skin that tore away as I forced it through the narrow opening. With one hand free, I released the other restraints. The Medicaid remained focused on the door where the sounds of fighting grew closer. I slipped from the table, moving on unsteady legs toward a secondary exit visible at the rear of the surgical chamber. The Medicaid noticed too late, one of them turning and raising her auto pistol. I lunged through the exit before she could fire, sealing the door behind me. The corridor beyond connected to a larger facility than I had imagined. Row upon row of transparent containment units filled a vast chamber, each housing a human form floating in nutrient solution. These were not corpses, but living donors, their eyes occasionally flickering beneath closed lids, their chests rising and falling with shallow breaths regulated by external respiratory systems. I moved between the rows, horror mounting with each step. Some of the floating figures were nearly intact, recently acquired and not yet harvested. Others were in various stages of processing, missing limbs, empty eye sockets, abdominal cavities opened and partially emptied. The most processed specimens retained only their torsos and heads, limbless and hollowed, yet still maintained in a state of artificial life. At the far end of the chamber stood mixing vats and packaging equipment. The purpose became sickeningly clear as I approached. The final remains of the donors, once all usable organs and tissues had been harvested, were processed into nutrient paste. The same corpse starch that formed the basis of worker rations throughout the hive. Nothing was wasted, not by the Imperium and its Project Cleansing Tide, and not by these illegal harvesters who operated in its shadow. A data slate lay abandoned on a monitoring station. I grabbed it, scrolling through the information it contained. Shipping manifests, client lists, supplier agreements. The operation was vast, extending throughout the hive and beyond. And there, buried within the administrative details, was the connection I had feared, authorization codes bearing administratum prefixes, requisition numbers matching imperial formats, payment channels linked to official accounts. This was no rogue operation existing despite imperial authority. It was a sanctioned overflow system, a pressure valve for Project Cleansing Tide. Excess biological resources that could not be processed through official channels were diverted here, harvested under less regulated conditions. The resulting products fed back into the imperial supply chain through unofficial channels. The fighting had reached the donor chamber. Through the entrance came figures wearing the patchwork armor of underhive gangers, but moving with the discipline of professional soldiers. A rival harvesting operation then, not arbitrators or imperial forces. I clutched the data slate to my chest and ran, navigating through maintenance accessways connected to the facility. Behind me, the rival harvesters began disconnecting the more intact donors from their containment units, not to free them, but to secure the valuable merchandise for their own operation. The accessway led to a waste disposal system, a common escape route in underhive facilities. I lowered myself into the foul sludge, the chemical burn on my lesions a small price for survival. As I waded through the waste, the data slate protected inside my scavenged clothing, the full horror of the system revealed itself in my mind. The entire hive operated as a closed loop of human resource management. Workers who failed to meet quotas were processed, their components used to repair or enhance those who exceeded expectations. The resulting productivity gains created a self-reinforcing cycle, with each round of culling improving overall efficiency metrics. Project Cleansing Tide was not a response to crisis, but a deliberate management strategy, the logical endpoint of an Imperium that viewed humans as its most abundant resource. And I carried proof, clutched against my ravaged chest as I moved deeper into the underhive darkness, away from the flesh markets and their terrible commerce. The Administratum complex loomed before me, its brutalist architecture a monument to bureaucratic power. 3 days had passed since my escape from the flesh markets of the underhive. The data slate containing evidence of Project Cleansing Tide weighed heavily in my pocket as I approached the towering structure, its weight far greater than its physical mass. My body remained a catalog of suffering, lesions crusted over with underhive filth, lungs rattling with each breath, muscles weakened by inadequate nutrition and constant flight. I had made my decision during a feverish night huddled in an abandoned maintenance shaft. The knowledge I carried could not remain hidden. Someone in authority needed to see the truth, to understand what was happening beneath the official narratives of resource allocation and productivity quotas. In my delirium, I had convinced myself that the horror existed because the highest authorities remained unaware, that if only the right official saw the evidence, the system could be reformed. Such naivety would have been laughable had it not been so desperately necessary for my continued sanity. The Administratum intake hall processed supplicants with mechanical efficiency. Servitors directed the flow of humanity through security checkpoints where auger arrays scanned for weapons and contraband. I shuffled forward with the crowd head lowered, worker's identity chip clutched in my trembling hand. The chip would register me as absent without authorization from my assigned manufactorum, but I counted on the system's inherent bureaucratic lag to allow me entry before the discrepancy triggered a response. The auger array hummed as I passed through. A servitor with a half-human face turned toward me, its remaining organic eye narrowing slightly. For a moment, I was certain it recognized the anomaly of my presence. Then it gestured mechanically toward Processing Station 7, its vocalizer emitting a burst of static-laced instructions about proper form submission procedures. Processing Station 7 was staffed by a mid-level functionary whose flesh had the waxy pallor of someone who had spent decades under artificial illumination. His eyes never lifted from his data terminal as I approached, fingers continuing their relentless input even as he addressed me. He requested my petition category and authorization code with the disinterested tone of a man who had asked the same questions 10,000 times before. I presented my worker's identity chip and explained that I had information regarding resource allocation irregularities in Manufactorum Delta 7. The terminology was deliberately chosen, vague enough to avoid immediate suspicion, specific enough to be directed to the appropriate department. The functionary's fingers paused momentarily over his terminal, then resumed their rhythmic tapping. He informed me that resource allocation concerns fell under the purview of the Office of Industrial Efficiency, Level 37, Section 12. A temporary visitor's authorization was encoded onto my identity chip, valid for exactly 4 hours, the standard allocation for minor administrative inquiries. The functionary returned to his data entry without another acknowledgement of my existence, already processing the next supplicant in line. The interior of the Administratum complex was a labyrinth of identical corridors and numbered doorways. Servitors glided along predetermined paths, delivering data slates and physical documents between departments. Human functionaries moved with similar automation, their paths worn into the flooring through decades of identical daily routines. I followed the directional indicators toward the lift systems, conscious of the security picked capturers tracking my movement through the complex. Level 37 housed departments related to industrial production and resource management. The corridor stretched for hundreds of meters, doorways marked with alphanumeric designations that indicated the bureaucratic taxonomy of the offices beyond. Section 12 was near the end of the corridor, its entrance distinguished only by the designation stenciled on the door, Industrial Efficiency Assessment and Implementation. Inside, rows of data scribes hunched over ancient cogitators, inputting production figures and resource consumption metrics from across the hive. The air smelled of recirculated breath and the distinctive ozone tang of overworked machinery. A servitor directed me to a waiting area where other supplicants sat in various states of resignation. Factory overseers with production discrepancy reports, supply chain administrators with requisition disputes, worker representatives with compensation queries. Hours passed. My temporary authorization ticked steadily toward expiration. The waiting area gradually emptied as supplicants were processed, their concerns addressed with the minimum possible disruption to the administrative system. Finally, my designation was called. The assessment officer who received me bore the signs of recent augmentation, the skin around his right eye still pink and slightly inflamed where an augmetic data processor had been installed. His desk was bare except for a data terminal and a single picked frame showing what appeared to be a regimental formation of the Imperial Guard. He reviewed my identification with mechanical precision, noting the Manufactorum designation and my worker classification. I presented the data slate containing the evidence I had gathered. My hands shook as I described what I had witnessed, the processing of workers, the systematic harvesting of human resources, the connection between Project Cleansing Tide and the flesh markets of the Underhive. The assessment officer's augmetic eye whirred softly as it adjusted focus, scanning the data slate's contents with inhuman speed. His organic eye remained fixed on my face, studying my expressions with clinical detachment. When I finished speaking, he was silent for exactly 17 seconds. Then he activated his desk vox and requested a special administrative escort for what he termed a priority resource assessment interview. His tone remained neutral, betraying neither shock at my revelations nor anger at my accusations. Two figures entered the office within minutes. They wore the unmarked black uniforms I had seen at the Manufactorum, their faces obscured by rebreather masks despite the filtered air of the administratum complex. They flanked me without speaking, their posture making it clear that I was to accompany them without resistance. The assessment officer informed me that my concerns were being escalated to the appropriate authority for full investigation. He thanked me for my diligence in bringing these resource allocation irregularities to the administratum's attention. The cold, professional courtesy of his tone raised the hairs on the back of my neck more effectively than any threat could have done. The unmarked escorts guided me through service corridors not shown on the public navigation displays. We descended via freight elevators, bypassing the security checkpoints that regulated standard foot traffic. The administratum complex extended far deeper below the visible structure than I had realized, level after level of restricted areas where the real business of imperial governance took place beyond public scrutiny. We emerged into a section marked with the designation Resource Optimization Division, a department that appeared on no official organizational chart I had ever seen during my years of Manufactorum service. The area was clinically austere, its walls bare ferrocrete rather than the faux marble facing of the public levels. The lighting was harsh and unfiltered, revealing every detail with merciless clarity. My escorts delivered me to an interview chamber furnished only with a metal table and two chairs. One wall consisted entirely of a one-way viewing portal, though whether anyone observed from the other side was impossible to determine. I was instructed to wait, my data slate placed on the table before me like evidence at a trial. The official who eventually entered wore the uniform of a senior administratum logistician, the gold thread of his rank insignia catching the harsh light. His face bore the distinctive scarring pattern of extensive juvenat treatments, a man whose chronological age far exceeded his physical appearance. He carried himself with the measured precision of someone accustomed to authority, his movements economical and deliberate. He seated himself across from me, reviewing the data slate with the practiced efficiency of someone who processed hundreds of similar reports daily. When he addressed me, his tone was not accusatory but congratulatory. He expressed admiration for my initiative in documenting the operational procedures of Project Cleansing Tide so thoroughly, noting that such attention to detail was precisely the quality needed in oversight positions. My confusion must have been evident. The official explained, with the patient tone of an instructor addressing a promising but slow student, that my actions demonstrated exceptional resource management awareness. Far from exposing a horrific secret, I had simply documented one aspect of the Imperium's necessary resource allocation procedures. Project Cleansing Tide was not a rogue operation or a local aberration. It was standard Imperial policy, implemented across thousands of worlds where human population growth exceeded sustainable resource levels. The horror I had witnessed was merely efficiency in action. The Imperium faced constant threats on innumerable fronts. Every resource, including human life, had to be utilized with maximum effectiveness. The processing of excess population into servitors, organic components, and nutritional material was not atrocity but necessity. The alternative was system-wide collapse and vulnerability to Xeno's invasion or heretical uprising. The official leaned forward, his rejuvenat smoothed face animated with what appeared to be genuine enthusiasm. He informed me that my evident understanding of these principles, combined with my first-hand experience of the processing procedures, made me an ideal candidate for a management position within Project Cleansing Tide itself. The Administratum had been monitoring my progress since my escape from the Manufactorum, assessing my resource management capabilities under stress conditions. My journey through the Underhive, my documentation of the flesh markets, even my presentation of evidence to the Administratum, all had been part of an extended evaluation process. I had demonstrated resourcefulness, determination, and most importantly, a fundamental grasp of Imperial necessity. These qualities marked me as suitable for advancement beyond the production line. The official activated a wall-mounted display, showing schematics of a facility vastly larger than the processing floor I had witnessed at the Manufactorum. This was the central processing hub for the entire hive, a massive operation where thousands of human bodies were systematically rendered into their component resources daily. He explained that the facility required overseers who understood the process from the inside, individuals who had witnessed the necessity of the system and accepted its logic. The position being offered would elevate me from expendable resource to resource manager. I would receive augmetic enhancements, improved living quarters, increased nutrition allocation, and most significantly, exemption from the processing quotas that governed the lives of ordinary workers. In exchange, I would apply my intimate knowledge of the system to improving its efficiency, identifying potential disruptions before they occurred, and ensuring the smooth operation of the resource reclamation process. As I struggled to process this offer, the official led me from the interview chamber into a connecting facility that had been hidden behind the viewing portal. The scale of the operation dwarfed anything I had imagined. Vast mechanical arrays suspended thousands of human bodies along automated processing lines that extended for kilometers in every direction. The bodies hung from overhead rail systems like meat in a processing plant, moving through specialized stations where servitors and tech adept systematically harvested organs, limbs, and other usable components. The official guided me along a supervisory walkway that offered unobstructed views of the entire operation. He pointed out the various processing stages with the pride of a craftsman explaining his workshop. The primary extraction floor where major organs were removed from still living subjects to ensure maximum freshness. The secondary processing area where remaining tissue was categorized for specialized applications. The final rendering vats where unusable organic material was converted to nutrient paste for redistribution through the hive's food supply. Most disturbing was not the scale, but the cold efficiency of the operation. This was not the work of madmen or sadists, but of logisticians and efficiency experts applying rational principles to the management of human resources. The horror lay not in deviation from Imperial standards, but in perfect adherence to them. As we walked, the official explained that my own involvement with the system had begun long before my discovery of Project Cleansing Tide. Routine Medicaid visits throughout my years of service had included the implantation of monitoring devices, microscopic augmetics that tracked my physical condition, stress responses, and cognitive patterns. These devices had provided the administratum with a complete profile of my capabilities and limitations, identifying me as a potential candidate for advancement long before I became aware of the system's true nature. My horror at discovering the processing operation, far from disqualifying me for further service, had marked me as an ideal candidate for management. The capacity to witness such necessity, experience appropriate moral distress, and yet continue functioning productively demonstrated the psychological resilience required for oversight positions. Those who felt nothing were unsuitable, lacking the understanding of what was being sacrificed. Those who broke under the knowledge were equally unsuitable, too fragile for the burden of imperial truth. I had fallen into the narrow band between these extremes, capable of comprehending the horror while remaining functional enough to navigate complex situations. This balance made me valuable in ways my physical components never could be. We reached a preparation chamber where servitors waited with measurement devices and augmetic components. The official explained that my new position would require certain enhancements: cognitive augmentation to process efficiency metrics, emotional modulators to maintain optimal stress levels, subdermal identification markers to grant facility access. The most significant modification would be a partial limbic dampener that would suppress my capacity for empathy to manageable levels without eliminating it entirely. A uniform hung ready on a wall-mounted display, the same unmarked black garment worn by the escorts who had brought me to this facility. I would become one of them, moving through the hive with authority beyond my former station, selecting candidates for processing, overseeing resource extraction, maintaining the system that I had sought to expose. As the servitors approached with their measuring devices and surgical implements, the true horror of the Imperium crystallized in my understanding. The system's greatest strength was not its brutality, but its rationality, its ability to incorporate even resistance into its functioning. My attempt to expose the atrocity had simply identified me as a useful component in perpetuating it. There was no escape, no external authority to appeal to, no higher moral standard to invoke. The system was the authority, and its standard was utility. The official left me in the preparation chamber, his final words a commendation for my service to the Emperor. The servitors began their work, scanning my body for augmetic compatibility, preparing injection sites for the emotional modulators that would render the horror around me manageable. A tech adept entered with a date, a slate containing my new designation and responsibilities. As the cold metal of the first augmetic pressed against my skin, I understood the final truth of the Imperium, that its machinery would grind on, consuming everything in its path, not from malice but from necessity. The real horror wasn't that the system was broken, but that it was working exactly as designed. The Emperor's truth was not salvation but utility, not protection but function. We were all just resources to be allocated according to need, our humanity secondary to our service. The emotional modulator activated, spreading artificial calm through my system. I felt my horror receding, replaced by a detached acceptance. This was the Imperium, not the sanitized version presented in propaganda, but the true face behind the golden masks and soaring cathedrals. A system that consumed its own to survive, that transformed resistance into compliance, that made monsters of men not through corruption, but through cold, rational calculation. As my new uniform was fitted and my augmetic enhancements calibrated, I became just another gear in the relentless machinery of the Imperium, no longer a witness to its horrors, but an instrument of them. The Emperor's truth was not that he protected, but that we served with our labor, with our suffering, with our bodies, and ultimately with our humanity itself. In the grim darkness of the far future, there is only service. And in the name of humanity's survival, humanity itself is the first resource to be sacrificed.